right, on this week's edition of the Sports Media Podcast, of course, I love doing this, it's Kent Summers. Kent Summers, who I've seen, known, sat next to, seen him from afar, do his thing through the years with AZ Central Sports, is now the new columnist over at AZ Central, along with Greg Moore. And Kent is nice enough to come in studio to talk about the job. We will talk about the Cardinals and all this, but first and foremost, when did this start to roll where you're thinking, I'm actually going to be the columnist?
I didn't allow myself to think of it as that. It started, Dan Bickley left in April, position opened, threw my name, said, emailed my boss, I'm interested. Had some interviews along the way, and like most things in our business, things proceed slowly.
Mm-hmm. Titanic.
So, not really knowing what the plan was, and I got a call. I was in on vacation in Connecticut, and my son lives there in mid-July, and they said, do you want the job? And I said, of course. So, but it's been I've always said, and I wrote this for my first column with the Republic, it's on my annual review forever, when they said, ultimately, what's your career goal? I said, I would love to be a columnist. And I wrote that for like 30-something years.
So. How many years has it been? Here. How many years has it been?
I've been at the Republic 33 years.
33 years. And from a columnist style standpoint, who's impacted you most?
Ooh. I've worked with some really good ones along the way. I mean, we had some really good ones at the paper, starting off with old-timer Bob Hurt, mm-hmm. kind of an old-school columnist who knew everybody. I remember going to a Final Four with him, and, he sees old coaches there, and they stop and talk to him. So him, then David Cass-Stevens comes mm-hmm. to town. I always admired David's writing. I worked with Dan Bickley for years. We traveled together with the Cardinals. But I've always tried to read people all across mm-hmm. the country. And the different styles. Everybody from Art Thiel in Seattle to Ray Ratto in the Bay Area mm-hmm. to Mark Wicker in Los Angeles and Gene Collier in Pittsburgh, all those guys.
What makes a good columnist, Kent, from your point of view?
I like to be somebody who not informs but also entertains. Mm-hmm. But I think there has to be some reporting in a column. I think you have to have some connections and some, information, I think, is important. But I think having a sense of humor and a writing style and...
It's not brain surgery, it's sports.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's sports, but, and especially the ability today to, to analyze, to put something in perspective, because, everybody knows the score immediately. People are watching the game. They're often doing something on a second screen and watching, and keeping up with commentary that way. So, to take a little bit further and to maybe explain why something happened. And I also think I like columnists who are occasionally funny, who mm-hmm. who write humor. I think, sometimes our section over the years has gotten at times to be humorless, when we sort of did away with a page two column, and
Bob Young did a great job on it.
Yeah, Bob moved to a different department, and we kind of lost something there. Not that you want to be a smart aleck in the paper every day, but I
do think it helps, though. Like, Alan Malamud and Nick Canepa were two people that I grew up having on as guests, admiring. Nick would slap me upside the head in San Diego. And I think Alan, I would always rip open to see what he had to say and find something. Doug Krikorian back in the day, for really throwing names around. The late Joe Gil Martin told me once that some days you have to bring the sledgehammer, some days you have to bring the fly swatter. The key of being a columnist is when to bring those out.
Yeah.
And so in this market with all these teams, do you see the sledgehammer, fly swatter approach from your point of view?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I've watched, having been in this market for so long, I've thought of things. That's a good column right there. That's a good column for a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. Or this would be a good column to kind of stick the needle in a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. I mean, some of the things the Suns have done, for instance, over the years, you could bring the sledgehammer. obviously with the
Cardinals. Don't know if it'll impact them at all.
Obviously with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Over, you know, there's a time and place for that, for sure.
No, I think, you know, the Suns haven't had a playoff game since May 29th, 2010. That's the last day they had a playoff game. And I don't know if it matters to Robert Sarver. So in your space, do you reach out to him at some point? Do you go through the PR channels? Do you just show up? Here I am, and let's...
Yeah, I think...
What's your process?
As their season starts, I think they open camp, you know, September 24th, something like that. I would like to go out there. That's a great time to get to know people. Obviously, I don't think you bring out the sledgehammer when you don't know somebody and they don't know who you are. And I also think it's important to show up to those events after you've taken that out and, you know, and be accountable.
When you had a famous back and forth with Derek Anderson, you're not afraid to dust it up and hold your own ground. If you were to talk about some of those tough situations that you've been in for the audience through the years, would that be near your top of the list?
Yeah, that would be near the top of my list. That one, you know, it's so different today because that one went public. So many times as a beat writer, you know, disagreements or if people have issues with what you've written, it's handled in private. You don't air those things out. I don't know that readers really want to
know
all that. I mean, I remember Bruce Snyder chewing me out when I covered Arizona State football and they had a players in legal trouble. And, you know, after a practice, he said, does every story of yours has to go back and chronicle every kid here who's been in trouble? And you're able to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now it's, you know, like the Derek Anderson thing when that blew up after that Monday night game and against the 49ers, I was just thinking in my head, it's like, oh, this is going to be all over, you know, tomorrow.
Which is not your intention. People in this day and age think it's our intention or your intention.
Here's the difference in that, and it really illustrates how social media has impacted what we do, is during that game, and they're getting beaten badly by the 49ers, and, you know, and they showed Derek Anderson and Deuce Latuhi laughing on the sideline. John Gruden says something about it.
Right.
So I'm getting tweets from people about it. Why are these guys laughing? And it became an issue, and somebody had to ask Derek Anderson about it after the game, you know, and because that was the topic for the Cardinals. That was the storyline. So that kind of impacts what you do, social media, for sure.
Has the phone rung at 2 in the morning from someone upset with you or an organization or an owner?
No. Probably the last call I got at 2 in the morning work-related was when I covered Arizona State. We were between beat writers, and they put me on the beat for a couple of weeks. And it was during the whole point shaving thing. And Vegas took that game off the board, or red flags, and Bill Frieder called me at 1 in the morning. And he goes, do you think this happened? Do you think my guys shaved points? What? I mean, he was beside himself trying to figure it out. So, but no, I don't get too many of those calls.
I got one, because I was a color analyst on that team with Tom Dillon. Mm-hmm. Tom did the games, and we just looked at each other and said, this team's really not good. And I got a 1 a.m. from Doug Tamarow, who, for those listening, longtime sports information director. He's like, hey, there's a lot of stuff out there tonight, just so you know, that's coming down. We had just gotten off a plane.
Yeah.
I think it was from Seattle. I think it was the Pullman Seattle trip. And, you know, that story is one that, in this day and age of social media, that would have been covered in a completely, completely different way. Who are you most looking forward to sitting down then and visiting with? Because primarily you have been on the Cardinals, not primarily, that's been your thing. And now you have the ability to go stretch out in any direction you want. There may be somebody completely off the radar, but there may be somebody that you're like, you know, from a distance, I've always wanted to sit with this person. I know you wrote on Devin Booker a while back.
Right.
But
and I've barely been around the Suns over the years, so I think it's interesting with the new coach. I'd like to talk to Robert Sarver and ask him some of the things we're talking about. Does it really matter? You know, how much does it matter to you that you haven't been in a playoff game since 2010? I've enjoyed, you know, going out to the Diamondbacks a little bit, meeting Torrey Lovello and Mike Hazen. I have interest in delving into high school athletics and from time to time. And as a father of three kids and one of them who did sort of the club basketball scene for a year or two, that whole dynamic fascinates me often for, you know, not very positive reasons.
Yeah, so, you'll need a shower when you get done with that.
Yeah, but. Yeah, and increasingly so.
One of your more memorable columns or stories, I think I told you this at the time, was your last game for your son that you wrote about, and how you wrote about the drive, and I got choked up. And it was even then, I was like, this guy should be doing more than just the NFL, because, you know, I feel as though that we sometimes in our industry get so caught up in it's got to be pro, rather than what's just going on around you.
Right.
What is the kid next door doing? You know.
Yeah, and I believe in all that corny stuff that what athletics or really any activity can do for kids coming up, whether it's band or football or any of that stuff. That was a rule, you know, my wife and I had in the house. You know, you don't have to play sports, but you have to do something. Mm-hmm. You're not coming home at 2:30 every day and, you know, sitting on the couch. You're going to do something for your school, with your school, in the community, something. And, you know, and they I think it's made a difference.
Yeah.
In their lives. And so I like to tell those kind of stories. I mean, we have one of the best prep writers in the country, and Richard Obert, who, you know, I'm going to have to really work hard to get a story he hasn't already covered.
The space that you're in now, are you, from a process standpoint, are you allowed to just call in and say, this is what I'm doing? Do they collaborate with you? Take us through the process of how you decide you're going to do a column.
It's a collaboration. It really is. You know, when the Cardinals opened camp, you know, they told me we'd like you out there a lot. We would like you to do a lot of football heavy columns at first. But after that, it's sort of up to you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every, you know, I've only been in it a month, but it's sort of like, you know, the same process as when I was on the beat. I'd email my boss, or we would talk Sunday or Monday. And it's like, here's what I have in mind for the week, you know, like. This week, for instance, I, you know, would like to write a Cardinals column based on the first two games. And then the Diamondbacks returned to town Tuesday after being out of town for 9 games. So, you know, like to go hit that. I have a piece that I'm working on about Herm Edwards really delving into analytics. And ASU has hired a firm that, you know, has really studied it. And you know, and Herm has said, look, you're going to see me going for it on 4th and 1 from midfield occasionally. It's going to be different. It's going to be bold. So all those kind of things. So I'll email my boss at the first of the week or talk to him and say, here's what I have in mind. What are your ideas? He may throw out a couple of other things, or he might say, I like this a lot, and that not so much. That's how it's worked so far.
That's how it's worked.
And there's a lot of autonomy, though. Both the way it's worked, it's same way with Greg Moore, our other columnists, myself. I think Dan Bickley had a ton of freedom to come up with his own ideas.
Will you go get on a plane?
Yeah, the plan right now is to go to every Cardinals game. The beat writer, Bob McManaman, and I will go to those games. Like to go to some ASU and cover some ASU events. I hope, you know, that I'll have the freedom to, if I see a good story that has an Arizona angle, even if it's go to Seattle or go somewhere like that. I mean, back in the day, you know, Rick Neuheisel, who's from McClintock High, became the coach of Washington. And I flew up there and did a big story on Rick Neuheisel. Those are the kind of stories I'd like to do. A couple years ago, I went to Minneapolis and spent, you know, a couple of days with Larry Fitzgerald, you know, going around his old neighborhood. And those are some of the great stories I'd like to continue to do and involve some travel.
How do you handle the process of a team that is not viewed as one of the most followed in terms of social media? And I'll use the Coyotes as an example. I think Arizona State basketball was there. I think that's completely changed now with Bobby Hurley. People are always probably going to be hitting you up or the paper up, say you need to do something on us. How do you handle that process?
That's good. I haven't had it to go through it yet. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to weigh because you have to gauge what's popular. What do most people want to read about? But yet again, you can't ignore another sport. You can't ignore Arizona State women's basketball with Charlie Turner Thorne. There'd be some great stories there. And yeah, is that going to get a ton of page views? Probably not. but it's a good story.
Phoenix
Rising, MLS coming here. We were talking about that earlier. Great story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't all have to be ASU football, Cardinals, Suns, etc.
The way that you process your week, you touched on it earlier, and I keep going back to process. A lot of people listen to this podcast. They like to hear how you decide on a story. Do you go to some of your co-writers, some of your beat writers, boots on the ground, and say, I'm looking for something? Do you go to PR people? Do you go within your sources of an organization? How do you go about finding those stories? It's a commonly asked question.
A little bit of everything. I know as a beat writer, there are certain, you know, there are always things that come up that, like, okay, this would be a better column than a story. This begs for an opinion, you know, and as a beat writer, mm-hmm. I can't really bring that. So I would suggest, talking to Dan Bickley or whomever, you know, this, you might want to get at this. There's something here. So I've already, you know, it's Scott Bordeaux, our Suns writer. I talked to him and he goes, you know, you really ought to do something on Devin Booker and the new contract and what's his next step. And I did that column. I think as a columnist, you have to be smart enough to know that your beat writers can make or break you, and especially make you, mm-hmm. and come up with good ideas or
Why
have
is that
relationship.
Talk about
well,
that.
The same. If you have, they are with these people every day, mm-hmm. you know, and it goes back to what I was saying with the Cardinals. It's like, you know, I would have ideas, and it's like, you know, this really needs to be in the paper or on the website, and it doesn't really fit, you know, what a reporter does. It fits more as a column, and the beat writers are there every day. And sometimes you just have to show up. Sometimes you show up and you just, okay, I'm not writing today.
Yep.
Or I don't really have an idea today.
I firmly believe in that.
Yeah, it's showing up's a big thing.
Too often it's just put it in the back pocket and just forget about it.
Yeah,
don't put the pressure on yourself.
One of my favorite singers, Jason Isbell, has a line about, you know, avoiding the temptation to live inside your phone.
Yeah,
you know,
well, that's good.
And I'm guilty of that. It's like, you know, I can't even get on my kids for telling them to put their phone away, and they just roll their eyes like, you're the worst offender. But yeah, it was like the Herm Edwards analytics idea I had. I just went out to ASU and took a tour of their new facility, and he came out of the office out of a meeting, and we talked, and he talked a little bit about that. So it's like, oh, there's an idea.
He's going to be must-see, I think. After
what a
games.
Story. It's a yeah. grand. It's just this grand experiment.
Sure.
And it's garnered so much criticism nationwide, and I get that, but yet all those same people are still covering that story. He's compelled. I was out there on the night where the ESPN crew had followed him around the whole mm-hmm. day. Now he's normally animated, but people who know him were there, and it's like he knows the cameras are here. You know, so it's. It's going to be a great story to cover. And you know, Brad, that's what people ask me all the time. Well, do you root for teams to win? Do you root for this? And it's kind of a cliche on my part. It's like, I root for the good story
that's
to tell.
It.
I want the good story to tell. If that's, you know, somebody the Cardinals going to the Super Bowl when nobody ever saw that, if that's a big disaster of a game where two guys are yucking it up in the fourth quarter and a blowout loss mm-hmm. to the 49ers, I root for the stories.
I remember going to Cleveland. You were probably there. And it was a buddy team, and they lost 50-3 or something
yeah.
like that. And I'm sitting there like, okay, we wasted all this jet fuel. We wasted all this time, meals, hotel, rental car, for this. Like, what are we doing here, guys?
There's some theories among beat writers about what the best season to cover is, you know, and one of my friends says the best team to cover is an 8-8 team that's just good enough not to get the coach fired. So you have mediocrity and you don't have a coaching search, but that's the perfect year. I always thought it was a 4-12 disaster season, that there were a ton of stories to tell in those mm-hmm. seasons, or the 12-4 team that was really good and was going somewhere and. You know, and galvanized a community, and people really wanted to read your stuff.
The business side of sports, and we'll get to the Cardinals after this, the business side of sports with these owners, the buildings that are going on behind the scenes right now, whether it is the Coyotes or if it is the Diamondbacks or if it is the Suns, it seems to me that we're seeing this mushroom cloud about to hit of new building and owners looking for ways to get buildings funded, which is not ever popular. but it's coming. And I'm curious your view of the facilities question here and how you take the stances on that.
I just don't see how they're going to get public money.
I don't either.
I don't see. I mean, they've already taxed hotel rooms. They've taxed taxpayers. They've, you know, rental cars. And the thing is, if you get a new building, what happens to Chase Field? What?
U of A facility. U of A campus, from what I've heard. I've heard that the U of A and ASU have both looked at that and said, we're in. If you're Robert Sarver, U of A, ASU have looked at that and said, we're in. But that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, my view is they're still going to be at the 101, 202. That's the epicenter. They get their Southeast Valley traffic that they don't get. You're on the west side. You probably don't buy into that conversation. But I still think 101, 202 is where they're ending up.
That's. I mean, I always thought that the stadiums should be there or should be downtown, not...
You covered Rio Salado.
I covered that whole thing.
Yep.
And, you know, people complain about the city of Glendale and the hockey arena and da-da-da-da. I'm like, well, they were the only entity stepping up at that time, you know, for both the Cardinals and the Coyotes. I think it's going to be a real challenge to get, for any of these teams to get a new facility. I mean, I'd be very surprised. But you look around the country, you know, the Rangers are moving in to a new stadium, out of a stadium that's 20, 25 years old maybe. The Braves have done it. Atlanta's a great place to study because there was nothing wrong with really the Georgia Dome. And now it's, you know, gone, and then the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is up. The Braves moved from...
It's got issues, right? The stadium, the roof's got issues.
Yeah, I think they finally figured it out. They finally can open and close it
down. The soccer team is selling out down there. Yeah. The Hawks are an afterthought. But no, that is a good comparison market. Mm-hmm.